When women get architectural technology, they really get it. If you cut them in half, it would say architectural technology through them. They're like a stick of rocket. They really do get what it is and are exceptionally good at it.
It sometimes feels very lonely being the only woman in the room. So having the ability to go outside that room and have a community that you can turn to, it can be extremely important.
Welcome to Where It's At, the podcast from CIET shining a spotlight on the future-focused design discipline of architectural technology. Know someone who could benefit from listening? Subscribe and share this episode with your network.
Hello, I'm Anne Vanner, Chartered Architectural Technologist, designer, educator and founder of Healing Buildings and the co-founder of the School of Biophilia. You can check out the links in the show notes for more information, but I'm going to be your host for today's episode of Where It's At. March the 8th, International Women's Day, is a global day celebrating the social, economic and cultural and political achievements of women. But why stop on the 8th? Joining me today is my friend, Magdalena Bartuszak, Chartered Architectural Technologist, PhD researcher, lecturer at Robert Gordon University and the founder of Women in AT. This network is about connecting, supporting and championing women in architectural technology, not just across CIAT Scotland's East Region, where Magdalena is based, but more widely across the CIAT's Scotland West Region and beyond, even to Lancashire, where I'm based. And it's a growing community, and it isn't limited by geography, and it's what's inspiring network that can be found in my conversation with Magdalena today. So, good morning. Good morning. How are you?
I'm very well. Thank you, Anne. Yeah, I'm delighted to be here.
That's wonderful. So, let's get started. So, for the benefit of our listeners who may not be familiar with the network, maybe can you start by telling us what the Women in AT network actually is?
Absolutely. And I think it's really important to note that it's more of a community. It's a community nurture and connection. So we meet regularly to chat with other women architectural technologists about things that are important to us professionally, to offer support, exchange ideas. We meet to engage with other women whose work could change how we see ourselves as women and as professionals. I'll tell you a little bit about the values as well and why that community exists. So it is there to offer support, to allow women to develop their career in the way suiting their individual circumstances. So it's not just trying to fit within rigid and narrowly defined job profiles, but focusing on the value of our knowledge, passion that we bring into workplace and our professionalism. I really do believe there's so much more to AT than people sometimes think. And, you know, one can make it into anything they wish, whether focusing on technical aspects or softer skills, combining culture and heritage, our connection with built and natural environment. And I wish for women to have a choice and not to be encouraged to retain work-life balance in the situations where life often seeps into our work. Yeah, we sometimes just don't have any control over it. Another important point to mention is that the network is open to everybody. All women ATs, whether they are members of CIAT or not, but also to those who work with or want to support women ATs. We run some events that are open to everyone, but our chats are reserved for women as a safe space to consult and to share.
That sounds absolutely fabulous. And what sort of gaps did you feel needed to be filled within the profession?
You already know that story.
I do.
And I think it's really important to mention it and go back a couple of years when the idea first originated. So when I first took on the knowledge exchange role for CIAT Scotland East, I wondered why there were not many women in a fairly active committee. So I asked the question, how many charter women ATs do we have in Scotland? And at the start of 2024, we had 245 chartered ATs who were men and 18 who were women. I was one of them. And to put numbers to it, it felt so real. So I looked at the student numbers, remembering that roughly a third of my class were women, although I knew that not all of them stayed in the profession. So in 2024, we had 104 men and 51 women, which means over a third of student members were women. That made me think, what happens when women leave education? And is there some relevant stumbling block there? And that's what led to the creation of this community. Right, now, three gaps, very quickly. So I touched on the aspect of the safe space, and we have explored it with our wonderful facilitators, Kirsty Gilchrist and Lindsay Henderson, recently, under the headline, which I loved, you are not imagining it, and it is not your fault. So we talked about individual experiences and systemic challenges women face, and how invalidation of those experiences diminishes confidence. This kind of takes us to the next point on finding our individual and collective voice in a male-dominated industry. It is, again, about having that confidence to communicate our needs, to speak about our values and aspirations, and knowing how to ask to achieve those and to get help when needed. And sometimes it's easier to ask another woman for help. So again, the community is there to offer that support. But it's also about empowering women to stand up for those values and stand up for themselves. And the last point, I think, would be, again, confidence. So all those previous points that I mentioned, they reflect on how we can work towards fostering women's individual confidence. By knowing someone has their back, by knowing how someone else resolved similar challenge, and seeing other women in similar and more senior roles as well.
It's often about just having someone to run something past, isn't it?
Absolutely.
Sort of saying, I've just heard this, or I've just experienced this. Is this normal? Is this right? So go on, from your perspective as a chartered architectural technologist and lecturer, what are some of the barriers women still face within the discipline of architectural technology?
You know, it's a bit weird because it doesn't feel like it changed over the course of my career much, although you would have expected it to change significantly because it's such a hot topic. So I really think that at the entry point, it's the misunderstanding at what degree in architectural technology can offer. We had a discussion with younger women on how they felt teachers are not encouraging girls to consider technical or engineering jobs in high schools, and how it requires resilience and willingness to challenge these perceptions. At RGU, I teach advanced material technology and low impact construction. And really the topics we discuss in the studio are anything from the role of the built environment in the response to stress, what we can learn from nature. We touch on biophilia and biomimicry. We look at health promotion and how we maintain health, talking about salutogenesis as means to understanding how we can stay healthy. We look at building physics, so more technical aspects, but also cultural connection of people with land in pre-industrial revolution times to understand techniques that are inherently ecological and that foster innovation inspired by nature. So really, we do need to keep talking about these possibilities that are rooted in technical understanding, but not as limiting factors of expertise, but sort of a foundation or a springboard to translating what we see around us into language that people can relate to and understand. So I do feel that help is required for women to see these possibilities and navigate complex career pathways. So the second one is back to the support and confidence. So if women are not getting adequate support to progress to chartership, then this is where we're not seeing so many women chartered ATs in across the UK. This comes with certain understanding that the pathway, the trajectory of women navigating employment can be completely different to realities of men. AT accreditation pathway is sort of non-linear. I talk a lot with younger people about it. It gives the flexibility, sort of opens up possibilities, but it can also be quite limiting and put the pressure on the applicant. Often in the industry here, that takes about 9 years to qualify as an architect. it took me the same time to qualify as chartered architectural technologist as well, having allowed sufficient time and practice to demonstrate my competence. And I really think that we need to be clear about this, that the support is needed there, but it needs to be tailored. It is a process that requires extreme commitment to become chartered. So, you know, having done my own evidence gathering while I was on maternity leave, I can see how, well, you know, this can easily drop off women's priority list. So if there's no support in the workplace because there are no other ATs, employers might not understand the process or what support is needed to progress to chartership. It becomes a huge stumbling block and sort of corresponds with the numbers I've mentioned.
I was just going to reflect on what you were saying about things haven't changed. I wrote my dissertation on women in the built environment. And then about 20 years later, I was asked to read another dissertation from a student who I was mentoring. And she basically wrote the same dissertation that I'd written. I just thought, how have we not moved the dial at all? I think you make a really interesting point there about sort of the journeys and the pathways. And I think there might be even a little opportunity sort of to work with women on the maternity leave. So having taught a number of architectural technologists, I think possibly three or four of them have actually got round to sorting out their chartership when they've been on maternity leave. Maybe there is something we can do there, sort of mother, baby and chartership coffee shops or something like that. I don't know.
Yeah, I love the idea. Absolutely. And it keeps you still in the loop as well. And, you know, at the end of maternity leave, you often come back to the workplace and have some keeping in touch days. Well, maybe we need to do the same when it comes to chartership, and then women feel like they can keep going.
Well, maybe it could be part of those PIP days, isn't it? Those keep in touch days.
Absolutely.
That actually this is your time to sort of go off and sort out your chartership. I mean, that would be so much fun, wouldn't it?
Absolutely, well? Yeah. To speak to other mums and other women.
Yes. and that network as well, isn't it? So one of the other things that we talked about in the little workshop that we were doing the other day was actually about the importance of creating those friendships. So whether those are the friendships that you develop when you're at university or in a workplace, and how important they are as you move around, as you, like you sort of say, as you navigate sort of your careers and move backwards and forwards. Again, reflecting on sort of the students I've taught, there is a number of them that they have friendships now. And the moment, you know, one has a child, there's a conversation, they meet up. And it means that there is always someone else there to talk about, you know.
It becomes more personal. And I think sometimes it's really difficult to get that balance within workplace. So having the opportunity to have another network, another community outside of work, it becomes really important then. But I think that kind of brings me to the last point where I do feel that sometimes employers consider these women networks as a nice to have or optional, and not at the same importance level as the CPD, for example, which is obviously a requirement. And we have again talked about this, you and I, about the mental health aspect in workplace and how that is a thing now. And you have mental health first aiders across so many practices. But maybe supporting women shouldn't be treated much different because we have identified it as an issue and a challenge. And now we need to provide means to resolve it. And paid subscription networks are not really an adequate solution to this task. And women ATs will have different challenges than surveyors or architects. So again, it's having the opportunity to reflect, to share experiences with other women who might have had similar paths.
There is also a growing issue about loneliness in the workplace, isn't there?
Absolutely.
About that sort of, you might be sat next to people all day long, but that you are the only person experiencing those issues, whether that's about sort of childcare issues or, you know, that whole navigating sort of parenthood, juggling all sorts of things. And if there is no one else there either in that space or within your sort of community for you to have those conversations with. That leads to loneliness, which then has an impact on mental health. So it is so important.
Absolutely, absolutely. And I think it's important to mention here as well that there's more and more research being done around working from home and how women often navigate towards it as a way of maintaining flexibility and being able to stay in a workplace or in a professional capacity. And that can also cause certain issues because it's not really by choice. It's there's no other option. There is no other option. And that can cause severe loneliness, really.
Yes. And then that sort of loss of identity or that constant feeling of sort of which bit of you is being successful or which bit of you is important at those sort of various times and things like that.
Absolutely.
So these networks, communities, what other things or how else can they be helping address some of these barriers?
So I think just to summarise, you know, what we're trying to do is to create a community that is inclusive, that's supportive, that's free of charge. You can be a member if you want to. Accessible and respecting and celebrating our differences. This is the opportunity for women to meet other women, to strengthen their confidence. If we can, you know, provide necessary training, we can talk about it, what women feel is required, and coaching opportunities. We've had some engaging talks and the feedback was amazing. And it just that in itself builds you up. It's opportunity to meet other women, offer and receive advice. We've kind of talked about it a little bit as well in the network that we all kind of wish that, you know, it's the network is women celebrating other women and each other's successes. Because at the moment, it is sort of wedged between the competitiveness of the sector. And we just want a safe space where we can share and celebrate each other.
Fabulous. And for younger women or early career professionals considering architectural technology, what advice would you give them about building a meaningful and impactful career in this field? Oh, well.
They can make it, yes. They can make it anything they want, really.
But, absolutely. End of.
End of. And we can support them. It is the first point is always follow your passion. And the recent talk that we had with Nicole Cranon of the Biophilic Design Institute demonstrated it beautifully. As I said on several occasions, AT can be anything you make it to be. If you're drawn towards the technical side, it can be that, but it can be a starting point. It doesn't have to be the final goal. So the questions that we were asking ourselves in that session was, what is your passion? What are your strengths? What are your values? Because that's important. That is really important when you're trying to plan for your career pathway. And what work needs doing in the world? And this can be the start. Where these four spheres intersect, that can be what leads you to developing professional and personal fulfillment. Number two, find your allies. And again, this is why this community exists in the first place. That community can be your strength. And you know, this is again something that we've discussed with Kirsty Gilchrist and Lindsay Henderson, our facilitators. It sometimes feels very lonely being the only woman in the room. So having the ability to go outside that room and have a community that you can turn to, it can be extremely important. And last point, lived experience matters, and work and life can rarely be separated. So this, again, is something that we sort of discussed with the session with Abby Trubig when we're talking about confidence and effective communication. It was about being kind to ourselves and setting boundaries. And it becomes really, really important because, well, we all want to do our job well, but we don't want to assume necessarily roles that are not meant for us. And I'll elaborate on that in a wee minute.
Well, just before you elaborate, I think the bit you mentioned about values was really important. And that the work that we sort of looked with Nicole about sort of values really reminded me of that values are really important, and I don't think we spend enough time or give people enough time to sort of work out what their own values are and their I almost see them like little manifestos. So I did a bit of work a few years ago on my values, and there are five of them, but actually also revisiting those as life changes. I'm at a very different position in life to where you are, to where sort of my graduates were and things like that. And while some of the values do change, some of them actually sort of stay the same. And it's really important to have that sort of almost little inner voice or that little manifesto of yourself sort of going, I want to do this, and therefore I can do this because I'm backing them up, but because I understand what's important to me at this point in my life.
Absolutely. And I think this comes down to confidence again, and having a community where you can discuss that these values and lived experience is important. It will strengthen that confidence. In terms of the different pathways, I think sometimes we're locked to believe that this is, you know, we made our decision, this is our choice, this is our only option. But like you say, the moment we start looking at the values, it opens up the opportunities and what we wouldn't necessarily consider as a work for an AT.
And then that really understanding sort of what it means to be an architectural technologist and the opportunities that profession gives you. And I've always sort of said that, you know, the real sweet spots are when you get sort of really good ATs, but then they bring something else to the table. So whether that's their interest in equality or in technical things, and all of a sudden you start developing those sort of sweet spots where you're looking at your design process as an architectural technologist, but you're looking at it from an equalities point of view. So those things, really focusing on what interests you and what drives your sort of passions and things like that. Slightly off topic.
Absolutely. No, but you're on point, because design process is collaboration. We need to work as a team to design something beautiful. It's not a lonely profession, is it? So
no, we don't design in isolation, do we?
And the effect of it is rarely good. So
yeah.
Slightly off topic.
Know someone with a story to tell or a topic to explore? Email atpodcast@ciat.global to nominate a guest or a topic.
Yeah. So go on, back on to topic then. So if we're having this conversation again in 10 years' time, what would success look like for women in architectural technology?
It's such a big question.
We're not doing easy questions today.
No, we're not. No, in 10 years' time. Yeah. Although I do want it to happen next year. You know, I want it to be like this already. But I think it's about having a choice and the ability to honour those values and aspirations. This is the point that always brings me back to that community and supporting other women to see that they have that option and a choice, and they've got someone who can either guide them through it or support them through it or just sense check what they're trying to do. It has been demonstrated by research that women are more empathetic and care more. But in the session that we had with Kirsty and Lindsay, we chatted that sometimes women will be expected to care more and in extension do more, assuming gender-defined roles. So I do hope that the industry develops into one where everyone cares enough to see, well, we all matter, we're all different, and that's a cause for celebration, because diverse and empowered teams can create wonderful things. Like what we just said, it is from collaboration that we build these beautiful things. And then maybe by then the purpose of the community will have changed. It will be different. It will be celebrating each other rather than navigating each other through difficulties. But this is the starting point, and that's the challenge that we're facing at the moment. You know, in the past couple of years, I've been doing quite a lot of research into what makes us happy, and strong reciprocal connections are the key to achieving this. So I do hope success will be measured by happiness and fulfillment and being part of a committed, supportive community, not narrowly defined by the number of women in senior management roles.
Fabulous. You touched upon about that conversation about sort of empathy and things like that. And one of the things, so I was at International Women's Day at the RICS on the 8th, or last, not a couple of Fridays ago. And we talked there about sort of the emotional labour that women are sort of expected to do as a result of that. And I think there's a conversation around that that's needed, that just because we can do those sort of things, we shouldn't be constantly given those roles of the mentor or the coach, or just that emotional labour of keeping a team together or supporting a team. So while we are talking about sort of women in architectural technology, what is the role of the men in architectural technology in this conversation?
I think they need to enable us. This is it. They need to be a part of the conversation. There's no good in us just talking to each other, women to other women. Yeah, there's a space for that support network that is for women only, when we can have a safe space to exchange stories and ideas. But there is a role for men to be part of a conversation as well, and to hear what we're trying to say and what we're trying to describe in terms of that lived experience of struggles that we've faced in industry. I don't think I know a team that's women only. So we all have to sit around the same table and just share our experiences and see how he can make the workplace better, more inclusive for everyone.
But because that's it, isn't it? The more inclusive spaces can be, so whether we're talking about the urban landscape, how we design for homes, or how we design for work, everyone actually benefits from the things that we're talking about, isn't it? Whether that's about sort of flexible working, or whether that's about how we design environments, everyone actually benefits if there are more voices and a greater diversity of voices in those conversations. So how do we get the men to be part of this conversation?
Well, maybe we have to invite them in to the next discussion. How about that? But I did mention that, you know, some of the events, so we've done a couple of larger events in the past couple of years, and they were open to everyone. And we had quite a lot of men attending, and feedback was great because we all discussed and engaged. We had a few amazing speakers talking about these aspects that you've just mentioned, you know, equity and how do we design to make these designs inclusive for women. And that includes, you know, safety and sort of that emotional labour aspect and caregiving. And then we discussed, and there was a lot of men who had great ideas and they listened very attentively. So I think we just need to make sure that we engage and explain what it is and make the community more visible.
Yeah. There is a lot of work, though, that is, there's that, the privilege, isn't it, that men seem to sort of have in terms of their expectations and trying to get people to occasionally think about doing things differently or simply understand what is said and then how that lands with the other person. There's still so much that needs to be done. I've been married for 20 years and we still have conversations around sort of the division of labour in our household and how on one part, one person thinks it's fair, and then another part, I go, but it's still not fair. And I'm probably, you know, as my 17-year-old would sort of gone about sort of a big raving feminist, that even in sort of our household, there still is that sort of tension. That to try and take that then into sort of a workplace must be really, there's still so much work there, but that's basically what I'm trying to sort of say, to get the two different parties to really understand each other, because it's not just one way, is it? It's the other way around as well.
Absolutely, but you're very correct in saying that often women face the same challenges within their personal life as within professional life, and that can add to that load. There's no way in separating the two. And I think, you know, as a working mum as well, I know how many times I had to just pick the kids up from school because they were ill or whatever. And then you just need to adjust and kind of deflect or be extremely flexible. But it doesn't have to always land on women. And I'm really hopeful that the document that will be produced by Kirsty and Lindsay from the facilitated sessions that we had can be shared with the wider community, with men and women, with CIT, to explain why we met, why we thought it was important, and what we said. And I think they will listen.
So we've also talked about sort of how some of the more, I suppose, practical things that might need help, how we might sort of deal with that. So I have had instance where I have experienced something and then thought, who on earth do I go and speak to? So bear in mind that sort of a lot of architectural technologists and practices are small with few people in there and often don't have a HR place. What would you say to women in AT who are dealing with sort of issues? Where do they go? And this ties into the conversation that we've had, isn't it, about maybe there does need to be a very practical space where women can go to get legal advice or support, you know, how to write an email to go, that just not accept, how to call things out or, and do that in a educational and, I suppose, in an educational way.
Yeah, and supportive as well, because it can be extremely intimidating when you're facing something like this and you need to challenge your superiors, basically. Standing up for your values, it's all very, very well said. I have experienced that in the past as well, and it makes you extremely vulnerable. So I think the first step is to have that supportive community where you can go. And it happened with our community as well, where women were just asking, what do you think? What do you think about this? What do I say to that? Have you been in a similar situation? And other women had advised on what their experiences have been. And it has been really helpful. But you're absolutely correct. And we've talked about the need for something a little bit more structured, like women HR.
Yeah.
where women can go for advice and receive it and know that the other person will understand or listen to what these individual circumstances are at that point, because it's never just about the work, it's about the mental load of everything else. It's about, you know, our vulnerabilities in everyday life. It's about what happens within home environment at that moment that can make us vulnerable. The decisions that we're having to make, maybe, you know, illness and things like that. So yeah, really we do need to think about how that support can be more than just an informal community.
Well, it almost feels like there needs to be a series of steps, isn't there, or a tier of something where there is this sort of very informal, I'm going to have a chat with someone who's possibly not in my practice but is in another practice, just to go, is this right? Is this wrong? Or have I just, you know, not understood sort of what's expected? To that, then these are the kinds of emails that might need to be written, just to highlight that you've heard something or seen something, because it's not always just, you know, the people sort of above you, it's the people next to you as well. You know, the jokes that are being said or the language that's being used. So there's that educational bit. And then what happens if you do need to escalate things because it is becoming untenable, you know, that your joy of going to work is being diminished because of the behaviour or the culture that you are in, and whether it is actually your place to be the person that changes that. You know, are you the person that needs to educate everyone, or, you know, what happens if you actually do make then the decision that you have to leave? What are the implications there, and how is that also sort of dealt with? There's a lot there. So yeah, some sort of tier structure of support that, and again, I've been looking at it from the point of view, could you get companies who have to report on their ESGs to use that as a mechanism to ensure that that is done or that there is the space for that.
Absolutely. And I think the ones who invest in their ethical policy as well, they would be more willing to discuss it with us. You're absolutely right. Wouldn't it be wonderful if there was someone, if there was someone else who can come in and educate your workplace so you don't have to do it yourself while you're trying to figure out what's happening around you. So maybe that's something that we have to take forward, and it will become one of the points for our community to discuss and see how we can make it happen.
Oh, yes. Now, there's an idea, isn't there? Sort of a range of sort of, you know, I suppose almost stories. You could use them as sort of as a, you know, a story of explaining sort of what it is to feel like when you are in a place and you think, actually, you know, this environment to me feels so toxic now, but I can't leave because of where I am. How do I sort of navigate my way through this? Is it my place? So a series of stories, a series of very practical sort of CPDs or things like that, and then actually helping people write those, like you sort of say, those HR policies about how you deal with complaints, issues. You know, it's a lot of like we go back to sort of architectural technology is predominantly sort of small practices, don't have their own HR sort of space. How do they deal with issues? Is that clear, and is it transparent, and is it there for everybody to use? Yeah,
small and large. I know stories from large practices as well and companies where it's really difficult because there's so many steps up that ladder. It's actually very, very difficult to get someone who can be your ally.
Yeah. So going back to sort of women, how do we, can we start this journey sort of much earlier on in someone's journey? Is there a, do we need something at university? Do we need, also then need to think about something that happens at schools as well, about making sure that we're not having these conversations in, if I read another dissertation in 20 years' time, I'll be very cross. Also be worrying about my life choices that I'm still doing this in 20 years' time, but there you go.
I think this is it. And this goes back to the point where I said about girls not necessarily seeing AT as a career choice. Yes, we need to engage with younger generation, but there needs to be also support at university. And we've kind of talked about it. There's willingness. There's not that many women, ATs, studying architectural technology in universities. So it would be relatively straightforward. We just need to make it happen. Make it into sort of a social, friendly environment where we can all get to know each other, and then it becomes easier to speak to other people. It's not just through email. It's not just, you know, structured mentoring. It is developing these friendships that you talked about as well that can last a lifetime.
Is there something to, I mean, looking at sort of across the other built environment professional professions, where if there's not a lot of ATs, maybe looking at sort of what is happening in quantity surveying and in architecture and project management, so to see, A, is there any learning, and is there ability to build momentum that way?
I think there is, and especially between sort of surveying and architectural technology, sometimes, you know, the pathways kind of cross over, and then someone who studies architectural technology might end up being a building surveyor or a project manager even, or work for building standards division. So there is a little bit of a crossover, and these stories kind of overlap. Quite a lot of women that I've met ended up in education as well. So it is this shared learning, but it's also recognizing that if you want to become a chartered architectural technologist, there might be certain aspects that are very specific to that profession. So we need to have a space to discuss these as well, and encourage women to pursue chartership, because it is empowering in itself in a way, and it demonstrates that, well, yeah, we can do it.
Well, so from my experience, having taught, I think every one of the graduates that I taught graduated with a first. And I always sort of said that when women get architectural technology, they really get it. If you cut them in half, it would say architectural technology through them. They're like a stick of rocket. They really do get what it is and are exceptionally good at it. I suppose there's a few things. There is a bit of research to understand sort of why people aren't attracted to that side of it at sort of school age. Then there's that sort of thing about sort of the chartership, but then also keeping people. I think there's a bit of education or research or understanding of why women tend to do a lot more sort of sidestepping in their careers as opposed to that more traditional linear route. You know, they step into they step sideways, I think, and then sort of possibly come back into areas, whereas I don't see that same sort of thing happening in men. But I think that's just an observation, I suppose, from my end of the world, looking back down at my career journey and the career journey of my contemporaries, I suppose.
I couldn't agree more, but I think we have to see it as as something that strengthens our position as women.
Absolutely.
Widens the horizons, and I wouldn't have it any other way.
No, do you know what? Now, I suppose, coming to the end of this conversation, and I suppose as I sort of start thinking about the latter part of my career, I wouldn't have changed a thing about my career and my journey. It's provided me an income. It's allowed me to travel. It allows me to stand on my own two feet, to have a reputation, to be part of a group that I am really proud of and enjoy being with. You know, sort of saying, you know, to people, I'm an architectural technologist, and there's a sense of pride in that. I wouldn't have done it any other way. It's served me extremely well.
Exactly. And maybe that's the story that we need to be telling. That it's okay not to know what's, you know, and how going to happen in 10 years' time. But it's been open to these different opportunities, and this is becoming our strength.
Yes. Yeah. Right. Do you have anything else? Is there anything else that we've missed out?
No, I think this has been a very enjoyable conversation, Anne, as always. And I hope everybody else will enjoy listening to it as much as we enjoyed talking to each other.
Exactly. No, we do like having a chat about this sort of topic quite a bit, don't we? It's important to remember that International Women's Day is more than just a single day. It's a movement for change that has continued every day since 1911, empowered by the collective efforts of individuals, communities, I think I prefer that word, like women in AT and other communities working towards gender equality. So a huge thank you to my friend Magdalena for sharing how the Women in AT Network is building connection, confidence and support for women in architectural technology. Do you have anything else to add, Magdalena?
No, thank you so much for having me, and I hope many women will join the community.
Yes, absolutely. It's been I've thoroughly enjoyed being part of those conversations. Wonderful. Thank you very much, Magdalena.
Thank you so
much.
Good
to see you.
Bye bye now.
Take care.
Bye.
You've been listening to Where It's At. A huge thanks to our guests and to you for listening. Want to learn more about architectural technology, how to progress your career, or how to work with a chartered architectural technologist? Head to architecturaltechnology.com. to find out more. The contents and views expressed by individuals in the Where It's At podcast are their own and do not necessarily represent the views of the companies they work for or the host. This podcast is for informational purposes only and should not be considered as advice.